Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Jay Wyden. Before I bring him on, I have to thank sponsors. First, My Patriot Supply, the experts in emergency preparedness. With everything that's happening in our world right now, it definitely wouldn't hurt to have an emergency food supply. Right now, you get $70 off a two-week supply and $100 off a four-week. Just go to preparewithfkn.com or click the link in the description. Also, C60 Purple Power, which is now a necessity in my house, super antioxidant, free radical sponge. I feel amazing, and you should check out their website to find out more for yourself. Go to c60purplepower.com/knowledge10. When you place an order, you get 10% off plus free shipping. And while you're on your path to bettering your health, check out Karen Holton. She offers the Quantum Health Transformation Program. It gives you tools to better your health and well-being, as well as she offers organite, zen domes, crystals, and much more. Click the links in the description to visit her website. That's KarenHoltonHealthCoach.com. And finally, get yourself a membership to our premium site. We're putting up brand new, exclusive, extraordinary content, brand new presentations, interviews. Corey Hughes is putting up amazing presentations and research that he's been doing. We're going to have some new content creators coming on board. It's going to get quite amazing. So go ahead and get yourself a membership now. There's all kind of content to check out. Just go to forbiddenknowledge.news or click the link in the description. Tonight, I want to welcome back to the show Jay Wyden. He is a renowned filmmaker, author, and scholar, considered to be a modern-day Indiana Jones for his ongoing worldwide quest to find clues to mankind's spiritual destiny via ancient societies and artifacts. His body of work offers great insight into the circumstances that have led to our current global crisis. He is writer-director of feature film The Last Avatar, director of the critically acclaimed documentary Infinity, The Ultimate Trip, Journey Beyond Death, and writer-director of the documentary series on the work of Stanley Kubrick, Kubrick's Odyssey, and Beyond the Infinite. He has also been featured on the History Channel and produced original content for Gaia TV, and he founded Sacred Mysteries together with his wife, Sharon Rose, and directed 15 films in the current Sacred Mysteries DVD collection. Jay, welcome back. How you doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm very good. I want to thank you so much again for joining us. And it was great meeting you at the Laughlin Conference. It was an amazing conference. I had a great time out there, great people, great energy, and you had an amazing presentation. Now, tonight, I want to get your insights into our current state of society. What may be behind this bullshit? Where are we headed? Is there something we can do about it? Because the world we live in today, if you were in a coma for a year and you woke up, you would be in a completely different world and you wouldn't know what the hell's going on. And it seems that things continue to keep rolling downhill with each day. Seems there's a new agenda every day, and more of our freedoms continue to be taken away. I want to start to go back when this whole situation started at the beginning of 2020. When did you realize that things were like not quite as they seemed?
Well, I had my good friend, astrologer Robert Phoenix, of course, told me about the Pluto-Saturn conjunction of early January 2020, and that this was like going to be super weird, that when these two planets go together, like a lot of weirdness goes on. And I decided that I was going to go to Costa Rica in early January, long before any of this happened. And I went there, and the whole time I was there, I was thinking, am I going to get back home? What kind of high weirdness is going on that I don't know about? And nothing happened. And I got back home around the 24th of January, and then it hit, like, immediately. And it appears to me that, well, one thing you have to understand is there was this guy, his name was Lee Atwater, and he was a political consultant for the Republicans back in the 80s. And he said that if it's an election year, everything is about the election. And I always remember that. And every time there's an election year, I realize that all the weird crap, I'm trying to hold my language here, that's going on is, you know, part of the election. And so when COVID struck, I thought immediately this was about the election. And I stand by that. I do think it's about the election. Hang on a second here, Austin.
Yeah, no worries. Now, when it comes to that, my thoughts are, you know, I've never followed politics. I definitely haven't voted in recent years. I don't trust any president we've had in recent years. I think that mainly they're under some sort of control at some level. I don't think that they are the ones running the show. So, you know, when it comes to an election like this, where in my thoughts, both sides are corrupt, what do you think the agenda could possibly be?
Well, I just think that it's tribal more than anything. And so even though there is a puppet master above both parties, the parties themselves get into a tribalism, which they think is actually real, even though the leaders know it's not real. And so that's what's going on here, is we have tribal conflict going on, and it's all leading to whatever. To me, pretty easy to discern.
You just broke up there for a second, Jay. You just broke up. You said it was leading to what?
What this whole thing is leading to is easy for me to discern. And what is going on is that the people who rule us are dark alchemists. And they want to transform the human race. That's been their goal for hundreds and hundreds of years. If you read books on alchemy, you'll see that that's always been the goal, is the total transformation of the human race. And so that will be completed by 2030. And this plan is the entire and complete transformation of the human race. And so what we're seeing here is the first step, which is how much will we take? And then the next step is going to be desperation, which is now starting. I don't know about your neighborhoods, but my neighborhoods are starting to get desperate. I can see it pretty soon. A large minority of people are not going to be able to make their rent payments. We also have the second wave. The first wave of people were the ones that got out before the COVID, moved to the country, and, you know, survivalists and those kind types. But now we're getting the second wave, which is the people who are still stuck in the city but have the resources to get out. And now they're flooding out, like Joe Rogan and Ben Shapiro and everybody in New York City. They're all just leaving. They're going out into the country. The smart people are all moving into the rural areas. And they're going to bring their idiotic politics to the rural areas and change them into exactly the places that they ran away from, which is really disappointing as somebody who lives in the rural area and is watching people flooding in from Texas and Florida and California right now. And literally changing the landscape of where I live, buying up every house at 10, 15, 20% higher than the prices that they were asking for, because everybody is so terrified that they're running out of the cities. And these are, you know, these people may survive because they have the resources, but this is, you know, I know someone, a good friend of mine, who went down, I live in the country, and there's not a lot of people here. And they went down to the gun store to buy an AR-15 just a couple of weeks ago. And the guy told him that not only does he not have any AR-15s or AK-47s or anything, he doesn't have the ammo for it. So even if he could sell it to you, he doesn't have the ammo. Then he said, astonishingly, he said, my friend said, listen, I'll give you the $1,000 for the AR-15. And when you get it in, you can call me and I'll come get it. I don't care if it takes 9 months. All right. I will give you the money right now. And the guy said, I'm not doing it. Because I have no guarantee that I'll ever have another one again. The suppliers are telling me they can't keep up with it. And this is just, you know, AR-15s, where the freeze-dried food places have nothing. It's gone. Everyone. So the second wave, what I'm trying to say is the second wave is buying up everything else that's left. They were behind the curve. They didn't see what was going on. And so now they're trying to play catch up. They're willing to spend anything to play catch up. And what that's doing is that's now drying up everything. Everything is going away now because the second wave of people who have the money to get out. But here's the problem. The third wave of people are going to be the ones who are not going to be able to make their rent and house payments, okay, because of all of this. And what is going to happen with them? Where are they going to go? And that's going to be where the tragedy starts, because they are going to be desperate. And desperate people will do anything. Hungry people will do anything. The first and second waivers got to not only hang on to what they got, but now they're going to have to worry about all the people that are going to be pouring into their communities who don't have homes, who may be armed, and who may be very, very desperate. And, you know, people talk, especially people in rural areas. The big Peyton place, everybody gossips. So everybody kind of knows what everybody has, all right? So it's you're not going to be able to protect yourself. There's no cops out where I live. We don't have any sheriffs. Sheriff's an hour and a half away at the earliest. The sheriff told me himself that I have to defend myself. He said, I can't get there, dude. Somebody comes into your house, you're going to have to take care of it yourself and hope I get there within, you know, 2 or 3 hours to help you. And so, you know, this is the reality of where we live. And, so the second waivers are the big problem right now, because they're buying up everything. And I don't think the supply chains can handle what they're doing. I keep tabs on all of this stuff. And I talk to the people who run these food places and the ammunition places. And they're telling me they've never seen anything like what they're seeing. That literally the back orders on AR-15s are now 3 years. So if you want an AR-15, it's going to be 3 years, it'll be 2023 before you can get it. And of course, the real problem is ammunition. So everybody is freaking out. Everybody is buying guns and food. And all of a sudden, 50% of the country's become survivalists, whereas just as little as 6 months ago, people who were survivalists were laughed at and made fun of and called country bumpkins and all of that. And now they're the model, the role model for where we're supposed to be going. Facility. I mean, you were in front of it. You saw what was going on. Hang on, I see that I'm losing my audio. Okay, so you know what's going on. You have the provisions. You're the smart people. We all grant it. You were the smart people. Yes, you were. You know, congratulations. I hate to say this to you, but you're not going to be living in your little contained home. That's not going to happen. Everybody knows that you've got it. You think they don't? They already know it. So they're going to be coming after you too. So you're actually going to be the prime target of everything. So you need to decide, you know, in your head what you're going to do. And I suggest that you share. I suggest that you help your community, because they will remember that. Whereas if you're hoard and you have a gun, an AR-15 on your roof of your house, shooting at people and acting like a crazy person, they're just going to gang up with 300 or 400 people and come get your stuff. So that's not going to work. And I think now it's time for level-headed people to, like, you know, think about the situation they're in. So the first waivers are in the best spot, but you're also the number one target. The second waivers are in the second best spot, but you're soon going to be the target, because the third waivers are going to be poor, desperate, and hungry. And, you know, and we're not even talking about the fourth waivers, who are the people left in the inner city who have no chance of getting out. That is going to be a place you don't want to be. is in the inner cities when the fourth waivers finally realize that the welfare checks don't mean anything, the food stamps aren't buying you anything, because that's the other thing, is that we're planting food this year. China's not planting food this year. Australia's having a hell of a spring, or it's not spring quite yet, but it's coming, but it's super cold. Where I live, I got 10 inches of snow on September 9th, nearly destroying my entire garden. If I hadn't gotten out there and worked for like 14 straight hours with my wife trying to save our garden, we would have lost everything. Unheard of that there would be this much snow in the summer. And yet there was, and none of the old timers ever remember anything like this ever happening. So, we've also got that to deal with, which is the Maunder Minimum, which is the ice age essentially coming. And I believe that the elites, or the cabal, whatever you want to call them, they know about the Maunder Minimum, okay? They may be telling us that everything is getting warmer, but they know that everything's actually getting colder, okay? Well, it's not getting colder. It's going into extremes. So you'll go from, like we did here, 90 degrees, 92 degrees to 25 degrees in about 27 hours, okay? So we dropped, 75 degrees, 65 degrees. In just a few hours, and then went back up. So, you can imagine the plight of the animals and the plants that live outside with these kinds of conditions. And this is going to continue. These wild swings in the weather are going to continue, and it's going to become very difficult for farmers to produce food. And so I implore all grow food to friends and family. Take care of yourself. Turn off the TV. Write music. Play music. Dance. Have a good time, because that's where we're going here. I don't know if they're going to make the vaccines mandatory. I assume they are. And I've already decided that I'm not doing it. And so, I'm actually planning on, believe it or not, if what I hear is coming, I won't be able to drive a car. I won't be able to go to the store. I won't be able to go to the hospital. I won't be able to go to the shopping mall without my mandatory vaccine card.
I mean, that's the vaccines, to where it's going to restrict almost everything in your life if you don't opt for this vaccine, and that's what you think is coming, right?
I know it's coming, yeah. And then when you talk about the vaccine, then you have to, you have to be honest about the vaccine. It's very difficult to believe that they could produce a vaccine in a year. Very difficult to believe. In fact, clearly they can't do that unless it was already invented. All right. So I don't know why they expect me to believe that they can rush science like that, but they do expect me to believe it, and they expect you to believe it. So what's really gone? Well, the vaccine is not really a vaccine. It may be a vaccine, I don't know, but that's not the reason for it. The reason for the mandatory vaccines, and they may like literally come to your house and grab you and pull you down and give you the vaccine, because they'll say you're threatening everyone else's lives. But inside this new vaccine that they're creating is going to be nanobots, which are going to be carrying CRISPR technology, which is going to reshape the human genome. And that's the goal. Remember I said that the goal of these dark alchemists is to transform the human race. Well, that's what this is all about. The COVID is excuse that they're using to get the mandatory vaccines, which is going to have the CRISPR technology, which exactly, it does exist. This is not science fiction. They can literally read your genome, and they can remove genes that they don't want. And so they're going to remove the warrior gene. They've already identified it. They know what makes us aggressive. And I've heard from higher ups in the government and in the cabal that they're, I don't know if this is true. I think it's probably not, but I think it bears repeating. And that is that This is by orders of an alien group who seek to, who want, I am told two different things. One, that this is on orders from some kind of intergalactic council that does not want us to join because we're too aggressive. And they're requesting that somehow we make ourselves less aggressive, and then they'll let us join. The other, which I think is actually true, that the cabal is trying to destroy us by removing the warrior gene so that we don't fight against them when they do the final takeover, which I think is coming really soon. So all of this is going to happen by 2030. It's the Agenda 2030 program. And I believe that between now and 2024 are going to be the most outlandish changes you've ever seen. And then things are going to calm down mid-2024. Because we're going to be whipped into acceptance of everything that they're doing by then. And then they're going to drop the ball on us. We're going to see a lot of people die. I hate to say it. It's going to be. It's not going to be some dramatic thing like the Holocaust or something. It's going to be a quiet, slow removal of the population until we're down to about a billion, maybe 500 million, like the Georgia Guidestone says. And then they can safely manage that amount of people. And somehow they're going to flush us into the smart cities, which they're building, which they plan to have completely finished and ready by 2030. The Lyft drivers are being told that they have jobs until about 2030, and then the jobs will probably be over. I know several of them have told me this, and that's because it'll all be smart cars by 2030 in the smart cities. You will be part machine, part human by then. You'll be able to access Google, whatever it is at that time, through your brain. And you'll be able to ask questions and get answers on everything. Of course, it'll be sifted through their censorship channels. So none of what you're actually getting is really the truth. It's whatever they want you to believe. And, you know, there's not going to be very many of us. And so everything is going to go to AI. I predict that music will be written by AI. Even movies will be created by AI. The artists will be removed because, you see, you can't have any independent artists in this kind of hive mind mentality. And besides, art is really driven by the warrior gene. All the artist is doing is taking that warrior attitude and inverting it into something creative. I know that as a filmmaker, because that's where the amount of force and power it takes to make a feature film, it can only come from the warrior gene. It's the same force that causes a person to go into combat. And filmmaking has been compared to combat in a lot of ways. So I think that we're going to lose our art and we're going to lose our greatness unless we say no. And I'm saying no. I don't want that. So the bifurcation, the war, the civil war that's coming upon us is not between left and right. It's between technocrats and naturalists. It's between people who want to live with their family, grow their own food, play their own music, love each other, dance, and people who want us to be caught in the cities, living their cyber nightmare. And being very unhappy in that cyber nightmare, unless you're taking the drugs or watching the entertainment that they're going to provide for you. Interestingly enough, the COVID has destroyed the state apparatus for arts and music. People aren't going to movies and people aren't watching sports. And that's a really, really good thing. And I'm really happy to see that some of what they're doing is backfiring on them. And they're losing their propaganda outlets through the overreach that they did through this COVID thing. And so I'm actually an optimist. I think we're starting to wake up and realize that we've been had. And that maybe the COVID is real. I think it probably is. I think it was probably invented in China, the way they're saying now. in that lab, and that it was, you know, because certain doctors have said to me that it acts weird, that, you know, as soon as you try to do one thing, it kind of slips around and does the opposite. And they said, that's a sign of a human intervention into something. So I'm taking it serious as a disease. I don't think it's nearly as dangerous as they're telling us. And I think they're pumping up the statistics on it for sure. I know nurses in New York City who tell me they have nothing to do, that their hospitals are empty. The hospital near me, which is a country hospital, which used to have 300 or 400 cars in the parking lot every day, now has about 20 or 30. I talk to the nurses and doctors. They tell me that they're going out of business, that the biggest fear right now is that these rural hospitals will go out of business. Maybe that's what the plan is, to drive people out of the rural areas by getting rid of their healthcare. So we're at this precipice of history, and we have to make our choices right now. And it's exhilarating, and it's dangerous, and it's like a thrill ride. And you know, our fingers are white from gripping the, you know, the upholstery in fear. And I think that fear is probably the worst thing that we can do right now. I don't think we should be fearful of this COVID or anything else that's coming down. I think if we act courageous, that will crush the tide, and they won't be able to take it. Right now in New York City, the younger people have just said, screw it. They're going to Washington Square. There was 10,000 people there last Friday night. No masks. They have the DJs going, all just spontaneous. Everybody dancing and kissing each other and having a really good time. And I think that that's what's going to happen, is more and more of this is going to break out. And the people are just going to say, screw it. But I will make one prediction. This is going to fade away after November 3rd. Just mark my words, it will just fade away. And by Christmas time, we won't even hardly be talking about it. That's what I really think.
Right. Man, now everything you said, when it comes to the upcoming technocracy, hive mind, how we're going to be merged with this technology, it resonates with me a lot, because you know it really aligns with a lot of the research I've done and a lot of my friends have done, and it just seems that we're coming upon a very critical time where we're going to have to decide which way our technology goes and if we're going to submit to this. It seems like, do you remember whenever Bill Gates did the TED talk about spirituality and trying to extinguish this, what he called fanatical spirituality?
Yeah.
It reminded me of what you were saying about the warrior, how they want to get rid of the warrior, right, with this vaccine. It seems like they just want to change us on a genetic level and make us something completely different that is merged with a technology. And then, you know, it makes sense and it's terrifying.
Yeah, that's what 5G is. 5G is going, that's why there's, even in my little small community where it couldn't possibly be worth the economic effort to put 5G in, because we don't have enough people for it to pay for itself, they're still doing it. So it's like it's going everywhere and they are insisting on it. And then when you realize that this is the bloodstream of their technocracy, it's how they're going to get the smart cars to work. And you know, it's only the beginning. There'll be 6G and 7G soon, but it's the beginning of how this smart world, it's not too smart, is going to work. And and basically it's just a monitoring system, so they know how much heat, how much natural gas you use to run during the winter on a particular day, how much food you're eating. And that's going to be the other thing that's going to be the real rub, is they're going to give us calorie maximums. And they're going to say that you can only have, you know, 1,700 calories a day. And they're going to be watching everything you're eating. As soon as you hit 1,700 calories, they're not going to let you eat anymore. And, you know, if you're an athlete, or you're active like me all the time, you know, you need 2,400 calories to keep going, because, you know, I'm running a 13-acre ranch, and, you know, I've got animals, and, you know, I'm busy all day long, and I can't subsist on 1,700 calories, and I need protein. And that's the other prediction that I'm going to make. They're going to outlaw meat. They're already in the process. You see the substitute meat products now in every grocery store, and they're pushing them. And these are like insects and things that they're grinding into meat. And so 3D printed meat. They want to take away our beef and our chicken and our pork. And they're going to say that it contributes to global warming and everything. And, you know, I'm going to test the whole thing, because I'm going to have cows. And if they come and try to get my cows, you know, I'm not going to be very happy. So we need to think about all of this stuff. And another thing is that if you go back into the Vedic texts of India, when the Mughals came into India and took over, the first thing they did was outlaw the eating of meat, okay? And so Indians went from eating meat to having the cows roaming around with them, freely. And so you have to ask yourself, well, why did they do that? Well, the Mughals tell you why they did it. They said it weakens them. It makes them weak. So they won't against us. So you take the taking away of our meat, the removal of our warrior gene, right? And you can see that they're building a passive population of robots who will just do the work, like George Carlin said, just smart enough to do the work, just dumb enough to not be able to figure out what's going on.
Now, earlier you were talking about how they're could be two possible scenarios. One, where this outside or off-planet force is kind of pulling the strings, and the other, that it's just, you know, human psychopaths that are from these elite bloodlines, this divine right to rule, that have been ruling our planet for thousands of years. And that's more what I lean towards as well. But I think there is an occult aspect to it, a spiritual occult aspect, or demonic, or whatever you want to call it, where they are kind of drawing on these dark magical forces, because I do believe that magic is a huge part of how they program us, how they rule us, how they use mind control with the media, Hollywood, everything. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, definitely. They are the masters of magic, and everything that they create is magic. You know, when the cabal decided, like around 1600, that they needed to move someplace safe. And so what they decided was that that England, because it's an island, was a safe place. But then they realized that London was incredibly safe, because you had to go down the Thames River from the Atlantic for like 120 miles to get to London, so you could create a gauntlet to protect yourself from attack, right? By having cannons and things on the sides of the river to protect you from invasions. And so the cabal took over London, created the Great Fire of 1666, which burned out everything which later became an autonomous nation called the City of London. And this was all created by the cabal, to create a banking system, and also the East India Trading Company, which would be the company that would go all around the world, conquering the world, creating the opium crisis in China, destroying India, taking over Japan, just wreaking havoc everywhere. And they're still in existence. They're just under different names and guises. So this cabal is now taking over our minds. The reason that they moved to England, by the way, was for what I said, for the geography. But when they got to England, they discovered something that was incredible. They discovered what one of the things that was England was leading in at the time, which was theater. Okay, England was the played on Earth at that time for theater. There was like 15, 20 theaters in London. A city was full of actors, Shakespeare, you know, all these authors and everything were playwrights. And they discovered that you could use make-believe to get power. And so they started using make-believe at that point to get power. And this later evolved into movies and TV. But for years, it was carnivals. All the carnivals, by the way, that were all across the United States in the 1930s, those were all run by the cabal. So the carnival would come into town. They would have and then we get all the guys in the little town.
Jay, you froze up. You froze up there right after you said the carnival came into town, and you froze up.
Okay, yeah. So people don't realize that the whole carnival scene of the late 1880s and early 1900s in the United States and all over Europe were actually run by the cabal. And what they would do is that these carnivals would come into a small town, you know, small farming town or ranching town that was generally poor, right? And then the people from the town would go to the carnival, and there would be people selling opium-laced medicine for cheap, at least at first. And they would sell it to the townspeople, and then they would get them all addicted. And then they would have burlesque shows in which they would get the men all addicted to sex, right? And then they would, if you had money and you walked into a carnival, a guy would come up to you and pat you on the back. And what he would do is he'd have chalk on his palm. And when he pat you on the back, he put a little mark on you right here on your shoulder. And you became the mark. And the mark is anybody who had this little white powder on their shoulder. And so everybody in the carnival recognized that that was the guy that had a wallet full of money. And so they did everything they could to relieve him of that money. And so the carnival is really, and I want to do like either a short story or a short movie on this, because it's really important. You cannot find any history of the carnival in the United States. It's almost impossible. They buried it completely. But it is the carnival is almost like the model for how you take over somebody, how you take over a people. You come in, you sell them sex, you sell them drugs, you sell them mindless entertainment. You know, they would have fights at the end. At the very end of the carnival, these two big dudes would come out and fight each other, beat the hell out of each other, right? It was all fake. It was pig's blood in the mouth, and you know, because you had to fight the next night too, so you couldn't really beat each other up. So it was the beginning of fake wrestling and all of this, but fake news, because it was all fake. And so they took the theater that they learned from England, and they learned how to permeate all of culture with make-believe. And they created fictional books. This is all created by the cabal. All of this is all encouraged and created by the cabal to screw our minds up, completely screw our minds up. And so they give us fake everything until now. Here we are in 2020, and we don't know what to believe. And that's exactly what they wanted. William Casey, the head of the CIA, said, "We're going to feed them so much bullshit, they won't know what to believe." And that's it, right in a nutshell.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you mentioned earlier kind of Hollywood, we're seeing some of the reverse effects of what they want. They're kind of scrambling. It seems that that some celebrities, some big-time Hollywood celebrities are getting nervous about things because there's a lot coming to light. Like you said, a lot of people are waking up to the corruption, to everything going on. They're seeing through the bullshit. They're coming out in the streets, taking off the masks. What do you think is going on there? Do you think that Hollywood, the actual corrupt side of Hollywood, is going to go down?
I think they already have. I think the Me Too movement destroyed Hollywood. I worked in Hollywood for years. I can tell you directors, not the writers, not the actors, and not the people that worked on sets and things. They weren't this way, but the producers and the people that owned the distribution companies, they were only in it for the sex. That was the only reason. They could have gone and worked in, you know, ran grocery store chains or anything, furniture chains, and made tons of money at it. They chose those industries for only one reason, because there was a residual benefit to it. Yes, you could run a furniture business and make millions and millions of dollars, but you're not going to get the sex. But in Hollywood, Hollywood is the only business in the world that continuously makes product, even though it is continuously marginalized as far as profits. In other words, 9 out of 10 movies never make a dime. Okay, only one movie will come in, like Avatar, and bring in everything in, or Endgame, and that will keep the industry afloat. Well, how can that be? How can there be an industry that cannot make money and it can continue? Because what they do is these Hollywood producers do is they go out into the world and they find boring businessmen who have a lot of money, who are in most cases probably married, their wives are getting older, their lives are boring, and they say, hey, I'm making a movie with you-know-who, Mrs. Beautiful, and I'm looking for, you know, $300,000 or $3 million or whatever to make this movie. And, hey, dude, you know what? If you help me out, you can be on the set, dude. I mean it. You can be on the set. You can, like, hang with her or him, whoever, right? And that's how they sell it. And so the person isn't even in it to make money. They're in it for a bunch of other reasons. Money, so they don't need it. So, you know, they're running a boring grocery store in downtown Akron, and they've got, you know, $4 million in the bank from working for 40 years, right? And they're in their 60s, and they're looking for something, anything, right? And this guy comes by, and he says, hey, you know, give me, you know, $1 million, and you can, like, hang, do cocaine, you know, maybe even get laid. You never know what can happen. And then, so Hollywood keeps, but now that's dying. That can't be anymore, okay, which is a good thing. Because now only people that want to make good films are going to make films. Okay, they're not in for the sex. And frankly, people in your generation are getting so good with filmmaking that they can make a pretty good film for, like, nothing these days, because the technique is no longer just up in the echelons of Hollywood. It's all drifting downwards, and, you know, somebody at 16 can take an HD camera and make an excellent film if they want. And so Hollywood is losing it on all sides. And then the COVID came, and that killed them dead, because now the movie mystique of going out to the theaters is broken. It's broken for me. I'll just get it on Amazon and just watch it on Prime or wherever, Hulu. I'll watch, you know, Endgame on there. I've got a great sound system. I've got a great TV. I don't need to go and smell the crappy popcorn. And so they've broken that spell. The same thing with sports. Sports are down like 20% this year over last year, because they didn't have sports for almost 6 months. People found other things to do. They found other things to make themselves interesting. I've got, you know, friends of mine, we go out looking for gold prospecting, right? We never did that before, but now we're going out and looking for gold and in the mountains around me. And so people are finding new things to do. And so the cabal is not perfect. They went way too far with this thing, and now and the other residual thing that happened is people are sitting at home thinking, and that's a dangerous thing. You really want to keep them at work dealing with minor things that are unimportant. You don't want them sitting at home thinking about how Dr. Fauci said that masks were no good, and now he's saying they are. Thinking about everybody telling you one thing, and then a month later another thing, and then a month later another thing. And you're starting to see it and pick it up every day. And then you start looking over at people that are conspiracy oriented, and you start listening to them, and you go, holy smokes, this is the only explanation that actually makes any sense here that explains this. So the cabal made a huge mistake. They the lockdown should have maybe lasted a month, if at all. But to lock us down for this long is causing a major rethink. And I think that they may have a rebellion on their hands.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're losing a lot of their weapons. They're losing a lot of their traction. But I think that their main weapon they use right now is social media and the media and the news. Yeah. I think that's all they really have to spread their fear. That's really all they have left, and people are starting to wake up to that. But the problem with the social media and people like you and me and researchers is they're shutting us down. They're censoring us. We can't get our messages out anymore, and I'm afraid that pretty soon, we may not have a voice on these platforms anymore.
I got my first strike on my reality check show about a month ago, and I haven't put out another one because I don't even know why I got the strike. I asked YouTube why they struck me, and they won't tell me. They just ignore everything I say. And so I they did it. They now I have self-censoring, right, which is exactly the whole point. And so, even I'm doing it. I'm wondering what I can say, what I can't say, And so, yeah, that's what's going on. I think we have to, I think we're going to have to start talking in code. I think we have to find clever ways to talk about things. We need to find adjectives that describe things that confuse the AI that's watching everything that's being said, because that's what's going on. There aren't people that are interfering. This is AI watching everything that's being said and then going in. That's why YouTube and Facebook have such trouble with memes. For one thing, AI can't figure out sense of humor, so they can't figure out that when something is a joke or not. So memes are still one of the most powerful ways of expressing ourselves, because it does a runaround around the AI, because memes are essentially extremely human, because it's visual and it's humor, and you have to understand irony and sarcasm, and AI doesn't get that stuff. So the memes can get around it, and so that's kind of where we have to go. I put a lot of memes up on my Facebook page because I know that the AI can't figure it out. And then when I put something up that I want the world to know about, I don't do it. I used to do it straight up, like, this is what's going on. Screw you. I'm not doing it, right? Whatever. Now I do it in forms of questions. And that screws AI up too. So I say, did you know that? Blah, 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 blah. What do you think about that? Did you know that this is happening? And so you do things that lead people down a path that is inobvious until you get to the end of the path, and AI can't do anything about that either. So we're going to discover new ways to find ways to communicate that are going to get around all of this. And we're going to have to start talking in code and, in different forms of communication. And you just decide that, if a word is now outlawed, which they're doing now, they're outlawing certain words. We just decide that instead of saying that word, we say number seven. Right. And then everybody knows that when you said that number seven, that you're saying the word, and then they know what you're talking about. And I think that's where this is going to go. You cannot, when they try to outlaw speech in prisons, right, they do all the time. They outlaw speech. The prisoners immediately create a code. Immediately they create a code, and they're talking in the code, and everybody gets the code except for the guards and the warden. And as soon as the guards, warden figure out what that code is, they just change it to another code. And that's what we're going to have to do. So that's how prisoners have to act. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Unfortunate that we're in this prison planet situation. Now there's something else that's been going on, kind of for the past few years, and it's been building up. It's the mainstream talk about UFOs and UFO phenomenon, the To the Stars Academy, which anything coming from anything official like the government, first of all, I don't trust to begin with, but it seems like they've been kind of ramping up the talk about this. And in my gut, it feels like some sort of preparation for something which I don't think is going to be an authentic alien invasion, but I think they may do something in the near future to kind of confuse people or even harm us with this UFO nonsense or whatever they're doing right now.
Yeah, the that whole TikTok video, that's one of our drones. I mean, I don't know what anybody's thinking about. Of course, it's doing things that an airplane cannot do if it has a human occupant in it. Of course, it's taking hard right turns, which would kill a human being. There's no human being in it. The whole entire exercise of that of those videos that the Navy took, that was a drone exercise. That was the whole point of that naval exercise, was it was a drone exercise. So they were sending drones in. The pilots didn't know that they were ours. That was the whole point, right? Because we have to see how the pilots react to this, right? So the pilots gave chase. They couldn't keep up with them, and they filmed them. And then they were told later, well, those are UFOs. Oh, no, they don't use UFOs. Unidentified
aerial phenomenon, UAP.
There you go. Proving that they're trying to change our language now on us, right? Instead of unidentified flying object, now it's unidentified aerial. So So what's going on? And they're getting mainstream people like Tucker Carlson involved in this now, where he's like going along. I'm yelling at the TV, Tucker, they're drones, right? They're ours, right? And Tucker's like buying it all, and it's kind of disappointing. And so what I think is going on is this is all preamble to the fake alien invasion, which I've been told by insiders is coming, and this is going to be done to cause soft disclosure. So they're getting a lot of pressure from ex-military and ex-people, the cabal is, to release the technologies because of Fukushima and all these other things. Is like we're needlessly destroying the planet when we don't have to. We got these technologies which can save us. Why are you keeping them concealed? And the pressure has been really building. And now the cabal has decided, as for what I've heard, is that they're going to create a fake alien invasion in which we're going to be losing at first, badly, actually. And then our great scientists are going to quickly, just like this vaccine, quickly invent devices which are going to give us a victory, and then we're going to have disclosure at the end of it. So it's a way for them to disclose without us lynching them. Because if they do it any other way, we're going to say, why didn't you give it to us 10 years ago? And, you know, there'll be a lynching party. And they know that. They've done their surveys, and they know that if we find out that they've had this stuff and haven't given it to us, there's going to be, like, torches and pitchforks.
Do you think that factions of our government have actually had kind of interaction with off-world entities or extraterrestrials to gain knowledge to reverse engineer some of these craft?
Well, if I tell you my honest answer, it's going to piss everybody off.
Hey, but we're looking for the truth here, so whatever you got.
I don't believe that there's I believe there's aliens on other planets and all that, but no, I don't believe that we're being visited by aliens. It's preposterous. What I think is going on is that there is a parallel universe that we share this space with, in which there are entities that are in the same space with us, but they're invisible. And they don't, sometimes they care about us and sometimes they don't. Sometimes we can see them and sometimes we can't. And sometimes we can communicate with them and sometimes we can't. And I think it's more of a shamanic explanation than, and I know people like Terrence McKenna and Graham Hancock agree with me on this, that the alien explanation is just a little too neat. And life isn't neat. Life is chaotic. And, you know, I've had my own shamanic experiences and interacted with these invisible beings. And they're just like humans. Some are bad. Some are good. Some are indifferent. Some like us. Some don't like us. And so you might meet one that'll just lie his ass off to you, right? You'll meet another one that'll give you a great truth. You don't know. And just like the aliens, you don't know. And the alien encounters that I've read about seem more transdimensional, like Bud Hopkins experiences. That's not to say that a interdimensional being can't come here and have sex with us. They can. There have been cases. There's a movie called Entity, came out about 35 years ago, a true story about a woman who was attacked by an invisible entity. It literally raped her and everything. So these beings can be extremely violent. And I think that that's what we're going for here. And I think there's actually a chance at communication with these beings. And I think that's where we should, instead of doing SETI, where we're sending out signals and looking for things, I think we should start trying to figure out how to contact these interdimensional beings. Are talked about by every culture on Earth, every culture, Western, Eastern, shamanic cultures from South America. The Catholic Church talks about them. The Jewish religion talks about them. The Islam talks about them. They're called the jinn in Islam. And I think that we need to understand this is a real thing. And that once we understand that, then we can become one with the other, instead of having it always be on the opposite side of us. And I'll be honest with you, these interdimensional beings like to tell us that they're aliens. They like to tell us that. They like to screw with our heads. I'm from Venus. Oh, see that star up there? That's where I'm from, right? And you know, they're tricksters, and it's a trickster mentality. And some of them are not tricksters, and those are more of the angel types who really do have our interests in mind. But, you know, how you attract these interdimensional beings around you, it really is up to you. As your attitude, if you've got a corrupt mind, you're going to attract corrupt entities. If you've got a mind that is, you know, for truth and beauty and love, you're going to attract those kinds of entities. And so we see that people like Whitley Strieber attract this kind of dark entities towards him in the communion books. But then when you read his previous horror novels, you realize that Whitley's got, you know, a pretty dark mind, you know, and so he's going to attract these kind of darker entities. And I think Whitley, in my last few conversations with him, he seems to have changed. He's not quite sure they're aliens anymore. He thinks they may really be transdimensional.
Yeah, you know, your explanation didn't piss me off at all, because I agree with you. I've actually had my first what I would call contact experience recently, and it was completely conscious. I mean, I think we go within to communicate with these beings. It was completely psychic communication, instantaneous. If I would ask a question, it would be instantaneously answered, like in my consciousness. And I think we're surrounded by these beings whatever you want to call it, the super spectrum, but they're here with us at all times. And like you said, there's these higher vibrational angelic beings, which I believe I did have contact with. And then the tricksters are lower vibrational, but yeah, I think you're spot on with that one.
Yeah. It's really the grand unified theory of the paranormal. If you think about it, it explains ghosts and psychedelic experiences. You know, the psychedelic simply free your mind up so that you can actually see the holes in the fabric between the two worlds. And so, you think they're hallucinations, but what is a hallucination? You mean you're telling me that my brain can, you know, create 10,000 works of art that I see in my mind that don't exist in this world? You're telling me my brain made that up? How can my brain make that up? Same thing with dreams. You know, I have an incredible dream where I'll see 20 musicians playing the most complex musical thing I've ever heard in my life in my dream. Is my mind writing that music? You know, what is writing that music I heard in my dream? And the answer is it's these entities that you're having an interaction with. And, you know, of course you can't write a complex 30-minute musical piece in your brain while you're dreaming. That's impossible, especially if you don't even know how to write music like me. So, you know, the world is far stranger than we can think. And, you know, and that is what makes it so attractive. And I think, you know, I would also, you know, I have to go here soon, but I would advise people to go it alone. Don't, you know, keep a group and keep your family around you, but as far as your own thoughts, go it alone. Don't listen to anybody. Don't listen to authority. They don't know what they're talking about. Don't listen to me. Go it alone. Make up your own mind. And if you find fellow travelers that think like you, man, grab them, be friends with them. And if you can, make them part of your family, because that's the most important thing right now is finding a group of people that you can get along with, that will have your back, that, you know, you can help, that will help you when you need help, when those strangers that may come to your door looking for your stuff, you know, you want to have somebody that will help you. And so you need to cultivate that, create a strong but small family of friends, a ring of friends around you, and help them, and they will help you. We can't go it alone. I mean, it's not going to work. And that's what they are trying to do. The cabal is trying to isolate everybody. You know, they... For 10 years, they had cops sitting outside of bars, and so nobody wanted to go to bars anymore because they thought they'd get busted, so then all the bars went away. They're doing the same thing right now with the churches. They're making it so you can't go to church anymore. So every single kind of human gathering, unless it's on the internet, is being outlawed. And that's what this whole COVID thing is about, and we can't let that happen. We are human beings. We need each other. We need to hug each other. We need to love each other. We need to be with each other. And they are the opposite. That's why sometimes I think it's a supernatural alien force that doesn't understand us. But the COVID thing seems so designed to make us alienated from each other that I can only think it's the most nefarious, evil thing that's ever been thought of by the human, by our human masters. And so, yes, I do kind of reject the alien thing, but I don't reject the idea that trans, multidimensional beings, multidimensional intelligences can have an effect on humans. And that is actually what I think is going on with the cabal. I think they're taking orders from very dark entities of that live in a multidimensional world exactly parallel with the world we live in. And they use ritual to contact these beings. And it's all kind of clear once you start looking at the occult literature, what's really going on. And I'm not coming from a Christian or a Buddhist point of view, although I respect those religions. I'm just coming from my own experiences, what I've seen in this world. And I can tell you that there are external forces at work here. We have to understand that and respect that and understand that they don't always have our interests in heart.
Yeah, I think you're 100% spot on. Jay, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I know you got to head out, and I'd love to have you back on in the future. For people who want to find out more about your books and your work, what's the best place that they can do that?
Well, my free writings are at jaywidener.com, myname.com. And then my movies and my documentaries and all that stuff is at sacredmysteries.com, and all of my movies and documentaries are also at gaia.com, so you can catch them there. And I have a Room 237, which is on Amazon, which is about The Shining and Stanley Kubrick, so you can also find some of my work scattered around in the mainstream.
All right, very good. Jay, thank you so much for coming on again, and you have a great rest of your evening.
You too, man. Thank you.